Imagine pouring this massive concrete foundation for a new commercial building, letting it set for 3 weeks, and then your client walks on site and casually asks if you can just, slide the entire building 2 feet to the left.
Right, which is just completely absurd.
Exactly. I mean, in traditional construction, the physical laws of the universe prevent it. But in custom service delivery or software development or really any complex knowledge work, stakeholders ask to slide the foundation to the left like every single Tuesday.
Yeah, and they usually ask for it in passing too. It's a casual message on Slack or a brief comment right as a status meeting is, wrapping up.
Yeah, oh, just one more thing, right before you hang up the Zoom call.
Exactly. And the Project Management Institute reports that 52% of projects experience this exact phenomenon, just projects quietly bleeding out from undocumented, uncontrolled expansions of work.
Over half of all projects. Wow. So if you are managing a portfolio right now, at least half of your initiatives are actively taking on water.
Which is a terrifying thought.
It really is. So to all of you listening, welcome to a very special deep dive. We are officially launching a brand new series today dedicated entirely to the program and project management topics that you, as PMs, face in the trenches every single day.
And our mission for today's debut is highly practical. We're tackling how to handle stakeholder feature requests without completely ruining the relationship.
Right, because you might be prepping for a difficult meeting later this afternoon, or maybe you just constantly deal with this kind of scope expansion. So we're opening up a whole stack of sources today. We've got field data from the Project Management Academy, tactical breakdowns on agile frameworks from ThinkLouder and Product Plan, and some really deep dives into contract structures from Ironclad and Boulder Apps.
And our goal today is to give you exact copy-paste verbal scripts and frameworks so you can navigate these really tricky waters, empathetically and collaboratively.
But before we can use the scripts to fight back against this derailment, we have to kind of properly diagnose the beast we're dealing with, right? Like, what is actually happening when a stakeholder asks for that just one more thing?
Well, the terminology we use to diagnose this taking on water effect really matters. We are talking about scope creep, which, according to our sources, is specifically defined as uncontrolled, unapproved, and undocumented expansions to a project scope without adjusting the time, cost, or
The
resources.
missing adjustments being the key there.
Exactly. The lack of adjustment is the defining characteristic. I mean, it usually happens little by little, A verbal request here, a tiny addition there, until it just bleeds resources. Now, if a stakeholder wants to add a new reporting dashboard to a software build and they're like, hey, we're willing to push the launch date back by a month and increase the budget by 50 grand, that is not scope creep.
Right. That's what the sources categorize as an intentional scope change.
Yep.
It's a deliberate, trade-off-driven business decision. You evaluate it through a formal, integrated change management process. You analyze the impact, rebaseline the schedule, adjust the budget. It's above board.
Whereas scope creep is an uncompensated demand, it just completely circumvents the change management process. It basically relies on the project manager or the dev team just absorbing the extra labor through unpaid overtime or, honestly, sheer stress.
Yeah. But our sources bring up this fascinating third category too, which completely shifts the blame away from the stakeholders. We naturally assume project bloat comes from a pushy client, right? But there's this thing called gold plating.
Oh, gold plating.
Yeah, it's when the project team quietly adds extra features in the background without any client approval whatsoever, just thinking they're adding value.
Engineers and creatives are so notorious for this. Like a developer might decide to build, I don't know, a flashy new animation into the UI, or an architect adds a premium finish to a design simply because they find it technically interesting. They just want to overdeliver.
Okay, let's unpack this with an analogy because I think this is so crucial.
Yeah.
So scope creep is like a leaky pipe slowly flooding your basement.
Yeah.
You don't even notice it until the damage is done.
Yeah.
But intentional scope change is like deciding to hire a plumber to install a whole new bathroom.
Yeah.
It costs money, it takes time, but it's a planned, deliberate decision.
I like that. Yeah.
And gold plating is your plumber installing a solid gold faucet that you didn't ask for and that you definitely cannot afford to maintain.
That is exactly it. And that clarity in definitions is what prevents disputes. Because you respond very differently to a stakeholder circumventing the process than you do to a senior engineer who's secretly gold plating their deliverables.
Right. So knowing the difference between an uncontrolled leak and a planned installation, how does a PM actually speak to the stakeholder who is demanding a new bathroom mid-project?
Well, the tension here almost always centers around the word no. A PM's instinct is to just reject out-of-scope requests to protect the team. But the ThinkLouder source highlights this fascinating psychological reality, which is stakeholders do not care about your sprint rules.
At all.
They don't care about your burndown charts or your agile frameworks. They care about outcomes. So if you say, we can't do that, it violates our sprint commitment, you've just destroyed your credibility.
Because they just hear that your bureaucracy is more important than their business needs.
Exactly. But on the flip side, the instinct to be a people pleaser is even worse, saying, let me see what we can do, or we'll try to squeeze it in, sets an expectation. And when you inevitably fail because the team is over capacity, a late yes, but actually no, is far more damaging than an upfront, honest no.
So we need a mechanism to say no without actually saying a hard relationship ruining no.
Right. And that brings us to the frameworks. The first one is the yes and framework,
which is basically accepting the value of the idea, but attaching the realistic costs or timeline adjustment to it, right?
Right.
Exactly. You start with a factual constraint. So the script would be something like, our sprint capacity is 40 story points, and we are already committed to 38. Adding this 13-point feature means dropping something else.
I love that. You're validating their request, yes, we can build this, while revealing the container. If you want to put a 13-point rock into a bucket that only holds 40 points, a different rock has to fall out.
Yep. It makes it an issue of physics, not policy.
Okay, but let's pressure test this. Let's role play.
Yeah.
Say I'm a super pushy VP of marketing. I walk up to you and say, look, I get your point capacity, but the CEO needs this export dashboard by Friday. It is critical. Everything else in the sprint is also critical. You just need to make it happen.
Okay, so that's where the yes and evolves into the fixed capacity trading model.
Ooh, okay.
So as the PM, I'd calmly respond with, I understand the board meeting makes this critical. Here is what we know. The team has committed to delivering features X, Y, and Z by Friday. Adding the export dashboard means one of those three will not be finished. Which one do we remove?
Wow. Okay, as the VP, I suddenly hate you, but I also respect you.
Right. Because I'm offering to swap the new feature for an existing one of equal complexity. It forces the stakeholder to confront the reality of the team's output.
I can't just bully you into working the weekend. I actually have to make the call to kill a feature that another executive might be waiting on.
Which usually makes them realize their new request isn't actually priority number one.
Right, but okay, what if they still want it, just not at the expense of this week's work? They still need to feel heard.
That's where you use the phased release strategy. You protect the current launch by pushing the new feature to a defined future version, like a phase two.
But you can't just say, we'll put it in the backlog, right? Because to a stakeholder, backlog just means a black hole where ideas go to die.
Exactly. So the script has to be hyper-specific. You say, we can't do that this sprint, but we can defer it to sprint 7 and add it to the backlog at position 3, which keeps us on track for the dashboard launch.
Sprint 7, position 3. That is so specific.
Specificity builds trust. It tells them their idea has a permanent home.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though. If a stakeholder escalates this to my boss, doesn't sticking to these scripts make me look, I don't know, stubborn or insubordinate to leadership?
A lot of PMs fear that. But it's not insubordination, it's clarity. Your job isn't to deliver impossible news, it's to quantify the cost of decisions.
So how do you script that escalation?
You hand them the steering wheel. You say, if leadership wants to override the sprint commitment, they absolutely can, but they should know the cost of the trade-off.
That's brilliant. And then you document it, right?
Always. A one-paragraph email immediately after the meeting, confirming we are deferring feature X to sprint 7. It creates an auditable paper trail.
Because having the right verbal scripts is like having good reflexes. You can dodge punches in the moment. But setting up structural boundaries ensures you don't have to constantly use those reflexes.
Exactly. We move from in-the-moment conversations to project-level safeguards.
Which brings us to Moscow prioritization. MSCW must have, should have, could have, won't have right now.
Right. It's a tool to help stakeholders understand trade-offs before a conflict even starts.
But getting executives to agree that a feature they want is a won't have is brutal.
It is, but you endure that tension early during discovery to set company-wide consensus. Then, mid-project, you just reference the framework they helped build.
Yeah. The framework becomes the bad guy, not you. And if Moscow is the vocabulary, the contract is the actual bedrock, right? Because zooming out, contract types inherently determine who absorbs the pain of scope creep.
Let's look at fixed price first. The vendor or agency takes a risk there. If the scope expands without a change order, the agency's profit margin just vanishes.
You need crystal clear statements of work for that.
Absolutely. Then you have time and materials, or T&M, where the client takes the risks. Every single hour of scope creep is bold.
Which is why the sources say T&M final invoices regularly run 30 to 80% above original estimates.
Because there's no immediate penalty for changing your mind.
So both extremes are flawed. Which is why the industry standard for custom projects under 300K is now the 2026 hybrid default model.
Right. Fixed price for the defined MVP launch, followed by a T&M retainer for post-launch iterations.
So for you listening, what does this all mean? It's like building a house. You want a fixed price contract for the foundation and the walls, because we know exactly what that looks like. But you want time and materials for interior decorating, because you might change your mind about the couch 5 times.
I love that analogy. Failing to use the right contract for the right phase just guarantees friction.
It totally does. So to wrap up our debut episode, or I should say our debut deep dive for this PM series.
Yeah.
Remember to actively distinguish between scope creep and intentional scope change. Leverage those scripts we role played.
Yeah.
The yes and, the fixed capacity trading, and the phased release.
And align your contract structures to protect your boundaries.
Before we go, I know we've treated stakeholder requests as risks today, but is there another way to look at this?
Actually, yeah, think about this. What if a stakeholder's constant requests for scope creep aren't actually a failure of project management?
What do you mean?
What if it's a sign of a highly engaged, innovative client whose imagination has finally been sparked by seeing the product?
Oh, wow.
Right. How might you, as the PM, harness that raw enthusiasm into a dedicated innovation backlog to secure future funding for a phase three, rather than just viewing it as a nuisance you have to say no to?
That is a brilliant reframe. Turn the floodwater into hydroelectric power.
Exactly.
Well, that is definitely something to chew on. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Go use those scripts, protect your teams, and we will catch you on the next one.